We thought we'd do this. My apologies for being late. And hi, Diane.
How are you?
Good. How are you?
I'm excellent.
Hey, birthday girl.
Hey.
Hey.
As a birthday present, we're not going to sing.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Here, let me turn the mic on here.
Are you going to sing? I can't wait. You're going to embarrass everybody involved.
I'm just waiting for enough people so I can actually do something out here. Okay, we're going to, if it's okay with Ms. Cazette, we're going to ask everybody to take a seat. Ask Borja's little grouping over here to break up so we can. Secretary, call the roll for a quorum.
Here.
Yeah, we're both here. Mr. Schaefer, good to see you too. Where would we like to start? Shall we? First item.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Today is the great California fallout. We're doing earthquake drills about 10:30 this morning on our buses and trains and our facilities. That's important. As you know, we never know when an earthquake might hit. I was in Washington the first few days of this week, met with seven of the offices of the L.A. County delegation and with Congressman Blumenauer, discussed America Fast Forward, the subway project, the Crenshaw project, and other important issues. With that, I'll conclude my report. Thank you.
Maybe a little more time than that. Thank you very much. Matt, Chief Communication Officer, report. The other thing about being in Washington, not only were they all panicked about their little measly 5-point earthquake, it broke half the stuff back there. So, I mean, the Washington Monument's going to be closed for a long time because of a 5-point. Anyhow, apparently the California transplants to Washington were the only ones who knew what to do when the shaking started. Everyone else was just running around crazy. Or is that what they do normally? Sorry, Matt, I'm just.
No problem. Good morning.
I'm just opening for you here at the EMAC committee.
I appreciate that.
Night only.
Just to give you some highlights in terms of de facto, we're in the middle of a pilot test and so forth.
Get a little closer to the mic, Matt, please.
We're in the middle of a pilot test where we lowered the price of the day pass from $6 down to $5 and made it available on board all buses. So far, we've had a 41% increase over the same 2 months since 2010. 57% increase over the prior 2 months in this year. We're still looking at the revenue impacts because we did lower the price, but in terms of customer demand, it's increased dramatically. Another advance in partnering with Access Services, actually, it's their program, their conversion of their customer base over to a dual access tap card and Visa debit card, which works not only on our transit system but also on taxi cabs. And it's the first program of its kind in the country. They just started rolling it out, and it's so far been a huge success, and actually we're seeing them out on our system as we speak. Also, APTA recognized Metro for some of its communications efforts. We received first place awards at the annual meeting earlier this month. And also, I'm proud to say we have what we believe is the largest van pool program now in the country. We're neck and neck with Seattle, and I think we finally beat them with 10,085 van pools. The numbers are all pretty impressive, up to almost 12,000 vehicle miles traveled. And all the metric tons of carbon dioxide that we're reducing. So the van pool program that started a few years back has grown tremendously and is a huge success. And another success on the technical side is the Next Trip. We continue to get users in terms of total hits and activity on the system, and that's the computer system that provides customers Next Trip information in terms of buses coming forward, so it grows more and more popular. And that concludes my report, and happy to answer any questions.
Matt, thank you for the communications report. When will we get the report on the TAP, on the experimenting on the TAP?
We actually completed the final gate testing yesterday, and so we're going to review the data shortly and perform analysis and bring that back to the board as soon as it's available.
Mr. Chairman, if I might add to that, I've just reviewed the report, and we have a bunch of data which I'm not sure if we know what it means yet. I also think we need to test lock at Union Station during the AM rush to get a real sense of what happens there. I think I want to make sure that we have data so we can evaluate what the revenue impact is. Yeah, what the revenue impact is of locking the gates, the net revenue increase, as well as whatever we think the additional cost might be of staffing those stations, if in fact we conclude that such is necessary. So it is a work in progress as we speak. The last time we tested the gates locking was a couple days ago, right? Yesterday. So anyway.
Yes.
Mr. Baer?
Yes.
I have a motion by... And it reads... by my name. And it reads, the Metro Board of Directors approved installation of a barrier gate system for the red and purple subway lines, as well as some of the light rail lines along the gold, blue, and green lines. Since that time, the gates have been installed, but have yet to be locked. Late last month, Metro embarked on a demonstration of lock gates once a week over the course of 4 weeks at four stations during off-peak time frames. The stations chosen were Hollywood Western, Vermont Beverly, Wilshire Normandy, and Wilshire Western. These stations were selected because they have one entrance and limited transfer activity. This initial demonstration concluded yesterday. While the board is yet to see data on the results of the demonstration, a group of directors, including Yaroslavsky, Katz, and you were not there?
No.
I'm sorry. Yaroslavsky, and I know that...
Du Bois
took the time to witness one of the demonstrations and found that it went quite smoothly, no major incidents, and most telling was the increase in ticket vending activity. Staff was on hand to assist patrons, distribute tap cards, and provide instruction on how to load the tap card from the ticket vending machines. This exercise is an important first step toward implementing a full closure of the gates. However, it's necessary that we expand on the demonstration and include stations that are more heavily traveled as well as conduct peak hour analysis. We therefore move that the demonstration to lock gates be expanded and include at least six additional stations, 7th and Metro, Union Station, and North Hollywood. In addition to off-peak time frames, the demonstration should also include some peak hour closures. So the three I mentioned are three of a group of seven. We've further moved that the data from the completed demonstration be made available to the board within 2 weeks, and that this information should include but not be limited to a breakdown of fare media used, how many patrons had monthly, weekly, or day passes, cash riders, transfers, MetroLink passes, etc. The increase in ticket vending machine activity compared to when the gates were not locked during the same period in previous weeks, and the number of citations issued. Is there a second?
I was there. I'd like to share a little bit of the experience. And it was a good experience.
My understanding is
that folks do not have tickets or other transportation modes were stopped at the top and told top of the tunnel or stairs and told that they needed to get they would be expected to get a ticket. So that cut down on the number of folks that came because many of them had been riding for free. And they thought that was just one more benefit that living in the county of Los Angeles gave them. There are stories that I've heard. I was not there, but I heard about the gentleman who came down the steps, learned that he had to get a ticket, turned around, went right back up. So I think it's important for that reason, also for
this wasn't on the agenda.
Who chose not to pay, and when he was detained, was found that he was holding some drugs and that there was a warrant out for his arrest. So for $1.50, he ended up with two felonies and probably will go to jail. The locking of the gates is going to bring us more revenue and help with our operations funding. It just, there's been talk from 7% to 20% to 50%. We don't know yet what the numbers are, but we do know that we're losing money by not making sure that everybody pays to ride the system. So,
Mr. Leahy?
I'm not sure if the intent of the resolution is to hard lock the gates basically on a 24/7 basis, or whether it is to expand the current testing and evaluation program. Well, now the testing, I want to make sure I'm clear as to what we've been doing and what the board's expectation is. We have kind of done the testing on a random distribution basis at different locations while we monitored it, and frankly, I think that testing should continue. We should begin to do the testing during peak period at the busy stations. And in addition to that, we need to do a much firmer analysis of what the revenue increase would be. It's nowhere near 20 or 30%. The cash take might be, but the net revenue, because many are prepaid, is nowhere near that amount. I would also add there's another side of this equation which we need to have a fix on, and that is if we lock the gates, it's very likely we would conclude we need to have station attendants. That cost money. That could cost millions of dollars.
You know, but we already spent it, Art. We already spent money. So, you know, we're not. We agreed as and I was not initially for the gates because there had been a number of studies that said that we wouldn't ultimately recoup the kind of money. But the board has already made that decision. So we're not going to backtrack on it, Art. We're going to move ahead. And the reason why I got behind this when I got briefed, we've taken too long on this. And we're not going to take any longer. And it's as simple as that. You know, the fact is we've been dithering with this review. And, you know, the board has made a decision. We do have to what we're asking for is that we move ahead on these seven stations. We should evaluate it. You're right. It may be. There are a lot of reasons. I mean, and Director Du Bois just said one of them. There'll be people who won't get on our system who otherwise might because they now have to pay. There were recent crime issues on our system. The board has moved ahead. We've spent, what was it, $80 million?
More than that.
Over $100 million on this? We're not going to just put it up and not, I mean, we're asking for the kind of criticism that agencies like ours get when you incur that kind of expense. So we got to move ahead with it. We want to check all the kinks and shake it out and make sure we're doing it the right way. But yes, I mean, we spent $100 million and we're going to implement this program.
Well, and Mr. Chair, Mayor, I'm not arguing against locking the gates. What I was outlining is the analytics that we need to do so that we know what the revenue and cost consequences are. I also note that Metrolink is not tap-enabled, so a test at Union Station during the AM rush and the PM rush will be very important.
And let me chime in what might be my last meeting chairing this committee or being on this board, but you know, I lost the argument about whether or not to have gates. I remember losing that pretty dramatically. And I know we're going to have gates. My only concern, again, at this point, is the transition, particularly with Metrolink. When the mayor asked Jaime and myself to go on the Metrolink board 3 years ago, you know, we went over there with the impression, coming from meetings here, that everybody was happy and everybody was involved, and got to the Metrolink board and nearly got lynched. And the only reason I didn't is I had voted no on it. But you know, our partners at Metrolink did not feel involved. The counties did not feel, and the counties didn't want to pay a cost, you know, for an additional piece just for LA. So we have 4,000 to 6,000 Metrolink transfers coming through Union Station in the morning. I'm not quite sure how those 4,000 to 6,000 people all arriving in a limited period of time are going to be dealt with, but I would like this not to move forward, at least at Union Station, until we finish working out away. And, you know, the Metrolink hosted a vendor show last week downstairs here, which had Cubic and all the other vendors who make these machines. And in just going around and talking to people, found a card that you can buy for like 18 cents with a computer chip in it that could have the tap computer, so it would be seamless. So, you know, we're trying to figure out how to make that work and how to pay for it in terms of complying with the MTA. So I would really like not to see this disadvantage the Metrolink customers in that, and at least not lock those gates until we have that part worked out. I also just, you know, I think these are operational decisions that ought to be, you know, left to the people that know what they're doing. It's micromanaging in my mind about when we do this sort of stuff. But again, that's my concern. And we're never going to recoup the money out of it. I mean, it sounds good to say that, you know, we're recovering three or four times the amount of money we did before, but when your ticket's $1.50 or $1.25, you can collect 10 times what you did before and still not collect a whole lot of money. I will be shocked if we collect in a year enough money to pay the annual $10 to $15 million worth of maintenance cost on this, let alone recoup our investment of over $100 million already. I'd be absolutely floored. Having said that, Diane.
Yeah, I understand what you're saying, and I will tell you, when I first came on the board, which wasn't so awful long ago, I was shocked by the fact that we had this multi-million dollar system we were putting into place. We didn't have what we needed for it. And we're moving forward, and it's not locking the gates, it's testing. But it seems to me that between Metrolink and Metro, we ought to be able to find out the technical. We ought to be able to solve the technical problems. We have a lot of high-paid people that should be able to figure that out.
That's right. That's exactly right.
Jesus Christ.
We inconvenience our patrons, if you will, because we can't figure out a way to make the system work. And I think we need to do that. But
I agree with you.
Along with that, I also talked to one of the deputies out there, and I said, you know, this was a problem, this was a problem, this was a problem. Do you have enough readers now, and how long would it take to roll out? Well, it takes a while, but every time we go into a station and do a test, the next week people are ready to go ahead with the system as we'd like it to be. So it doesn't take a lot of time to educate folks, and I just think the testing is a positive step.
Absolutely. And yours, Director Yaroslavsky's office has asked for now to take Union Station out. I'll do that for now, but if you're okay with it, Mr. Boyce. So we'll accept that as a friendly amendment. But I don't buy the arguments that Mr. Katz has raised. They're issues. There's no question about it. We should address those issues. But we have spent $100-some-odd million on this project. You know, let's make it work. And the problem here is that until Director Du Bois and Director Yaroslavsky and my office went out there, we weren't making progress on this. We've got to make progress on this. There's a lot of very smart people. The science is there. We're just going to have to make it work. So I'm willing to accept Mr. Yaroslavsky's
Mr. Boyce.
And Mr. Boyce has seconded that. Is there any objection?
Mr. Chair? Mr. Chair? I would suggest moving this to the full...
61.
Oh, it is? I'm sorry.
We are moving it.
The motion will be to move to the full committee.
No, I didn't realize it was agendized.
Okay.
It was agendized.
All right, I'm sorry.
Yeah, we're going to move it to...
No, there's a friendly amendment to take it out. Let me just get clarification. Diane, is your motion calling for them to be locked or continue the test?
Continue the test, I'm sorry.
All right. Then, you know, without Union Station, continue to test. I'll support moving to the full board. I do think, though, the questions that were raised need to be answered before next week about how many customer service reps or how many people we're going to have at these major locations to help people. And Matt, if you could tell us that next week, that would be helpful. All right, when we come to the full board meeting for that. All right. Without objection, that will be passed. That will be passed. Mike, you're okay on this? Keep me as a non-vote, please. Just not voting. We still have we have enough votes to Antonio, the mayor, Diane, and Antonovich to the full board. Cat's not voting. All right. That was it. Okay, next item. Going to go federal? Rafi, what's the good news? Checks in the mail. Can we get it yet?
I'm going to get to that. Chairman Katz, members of the Executive Management Committee, pleased to present a number of federal issues to you today. I'm also going to be touching on a couple of state issues for my colleague Michael Turner. I've got prepared remarks. I'm not going to read from them. I want to touch on about 8 items. Number one, we received some good news this week from the Federal Transit Administration. We received $25 million in State of Good Repair grants for the purchase of CNG buses. This grant was the fourth largest in the nation. We also received a $9.7 million livability grant for a bus stop at Patsouras Plaza that would serve the El Monte busway. That was the largest livability grant in the nation. Third, we got... we're headed into the deadline for Tiger 3, which is October 31st, and we're going to be submitting 2 grants, one for State Route 2 and one for the Crenshaw LAX rail line. Number 4, and this was announced last week by the White House, 14 infrastructure projects around the nation were selected for accelerated federal review. Crenshaw was one of them. There's likely 2 areas where that federal review process can be expedited. One relates to the trenches near LAX and the permits that are required with the FAA. And second is the risk assessment that is done per federal regulations. And we're working with the DOT on that. Our team continues to closely monitor the authorization bill. Where we are right now is we have an extension that takes us through March of 2012. We continue to press forward on our America Fast Forward initiative. Most recently, we're in conversation, a positive dialogue with Senator Wyden and Hoeven on their TRIPS bill and how to make that bill something that would be much more worthwhile to the state of California and specifically to Los Angeles County. Also, with respect to America Fast Forward, we're working and our CO is working very closely with the FDA with respect to our new starts. And we're grateful to our friends at the FDA on a local, regional, and national level. And last week, I want to cite a study from the GAO that had to do with minimum guarantee, and it showed that every state in our union gets more from the Highway Trust Fund than they put in, which sort of gets to the point of why we have an solvency issues with the Highway Trust Fund. Also last week, Chairman Micah had a committee hearing on the National Infrastructure Bank. And what's important there is the Republicans largely took the opportunity to treat the bank as a pinata, and they struck it on any number of occasions. They thought, saying how what a bad idea it was. But what did emerge from that hearing is that there is an appetite by both Democrats and the GOP for a bond initiative to be embedded in an authorization bill, and that's what our nexus is with the TRIPS bill, which is the Wyden bill. The appropriations process is moving forward. Yesterday, the Senate considered a minibus, which is three distinct appropriations bills bundled together. One of them was a transportation bill. And lastly, and this is something that I know that Director Antonovich has spoken about in the past, and that is a CNG tax credit that we get for our agency. That tax credit is going to expire December 31st. We brought that to the attention of every member of our delegation and to the leadership on the Ways and Means Committee. We have been told that Congress debating the super committee with all that's going on the Hill, there's really no chance for them to consider the CNG tax credit. And what's likely going to happen is we're going to have it expire on December 31st, and then we're going to have legislation to address it early next year that would include a retroactivity clause, so it would capture that CNG tax credit, which for our agency is worth about $30 million a year. That concludes my federal report. If there are any questions, I could move on to a state report.
Supervisor Antonovich.
Just one question. Again, we've made the point that 38% of the road bridge funds are going into non-road projects. Are there any efforts in Washington to change those funds, that percentage, so that the dollars that do go into roads go into roads?
There are, Director Antonovich. This issue was raised yesterday on the Senate floor by Senator John McCain of Arizona. He offered an amendment which sought to reduce the amount of federal transportation money that goes into non-highway projects. That amendment failed. However, Chairman Boxer and her ranking committee member, James Inhofe of Oklahoma, said that they would work with Senator McCain to place language in the new authorization bill that would have limitations. I think what they're going to do, Director Antonovich, is they're going to include language that gives the leeway to the states in how they treat the money, and they're not going to have a one solid rule from the federal government. But Boxer and Inhofe are on it. I'm probably tomorrow going to be in touch with both offices, and I'll get that information. I'll share it with your office and with your deputy. I promise to do that.
Robbie, could you send me the latest copy also of the TRIPS bond bill, of Wyden's bond?
Absolutely.
Okay, thank you. Okay, you're going to do the state for Mr. Turner?
Yes.
As you know, the legislative session recessed on September 9th, and the governor concluded the consideration of legislation on October 9th. The legislature considered a number of measures in the concluding weeks, and I would like to highlight a few of those measures. First, we are pleased to report that the legislature approved and the governor signed AB 706 by Assemblymember Torres, which clarifies the governing statute for the Foothill Extension Construction Authority. That measure will ensure that the Construction Authority continues to function and will ensure that the board of that authority will continue in its current configuration. We also work with transportation agencies throughout Southern California to restore funding for the preliminary studies of the high-speed rail project through the San Gabriel Valley, the Inland Empire, and San Diego. This measure, AB 615, was authored by Assemblyman Lowenthal and will restore $4 million to the HSR budget. The legislature also approved a package of bills at the end of the session related to the Farmers Field Stadium in downtown Los Angeles. Metro is looking very closely at the companion legislation, AB 900, that provides a streamlined CEQA process for similar projects. Specifically, we are looking at this legislation as a model for expediting CEQA process for transit projects, and we will pursue similar legislation next year.
Rothy, I know this is Turner's area, but do you know if the lawyers have decided whether what path the companion bill passed, to the Steinberg bill, I think it was a Padilla bill, have we determined if we're eligible under? I mean, because they made some representation. It didn't look to me like our transit projects were eligible for much.
Yeah, Michael is in dialogue on that.
Sure, I think the two issues is one on the CEQA matter and how our projects are treated, number one. And then second is and much more specific to Los Angeles Metro, is the contention that this would be the most transit-friendly stadium in the nation, and how that specifically relates to our agency. So two issues. Michael is drilling down on both of them, but specifically on how the CEQA, the expedited CEQA process would relate to our projects.
I found it, and talked to a number of legislators, sort of outrageous that they do this for the private side and not do it for the public side, particularly if for no other reason to give them cover for what they were doing. It just astounds me. Now, a number of people have said that they're going to reopen it, and Mike Furia said he will make sure transit gets in it. But, that puts us a year behind everybody else. And so, sort of amazing, but... Then again, it's Sacramento.
I agree.
All right.
To continue, Metro's advocacy team is also working on a number of issues related to the state's fiscal condition and its impacts to our projects and programs. Just as a reminder, the state budget was balanced based on the state anticipating $4 billion in new revenue over the fiscal year. If that revenue is not received, then cuts to the state budget are automatically triggered. So far, tax receipts are tracking below the anticipated levels, and it appears at this point that the cuts may have to be made. The mandatory cuts identified in the budget do not directly impact transportation funds. One of our key priorities this year has been to maximize the funding for projects that rely on state bond sales. We instituted a process early this year to partner with Caltrans, the CTC, and our local project sponsors to both ensure that the state is receiving the most up-to-date status of all the projects, but also to ensure that we are coordinating with all project sponsors in Los Angeles County to maximize our funding opportunities. Key to this effort was the announcement earlier this summer that Caltrans had approximately $2 billion in cash on hand from previous bond sales. The situation was primarily due to slower than anticipated cash drawdowns by local project sponsors and formed the basis of the current budget agreement. That budget agreement utilizes the $2 billion and a smaller bond sale for transportation. We will continue to work with our state and local partners to do whatever we can to facilitate project development and funding so that we can bring these vital projects to fruition. Lastly, I want to touch on our progress on achieving local control in the Losan Corridor and some key upcoming events relating to high-speed rail. The board recently took the courageous step of approving an effort to achieve local control of our interregional rail route of the Losan Corridor. The CEOs of all agencies in the corridor have held extensive discussions on this topic, and a legislative staff are coordinating a joint effort aimed at legislation next year. We are making significant progress on this issue and will keep the board apprised of our progress. There are also some significant events in the near future regarding the state's high-speed rail project. The authority is scheduled to release their updated business plan on November 1st, and the authority board will consider that plan at its meeting on November 3rd. We will continue to urge the authority to ensure that the business plan includes a credible effort to bring the project to key population centers after it completes the initial work in the Central Valley. Metro remains a strong supporter of high-speed rail, and we continue to work with our partners throughout the state to bring this important project and its jobs to our state. And that concludes my remarks, and I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Any questions from committee members or anyone else on the state report? Rafi doing his Michael Turner impression, which we appreciate. Apparently not, but thank you. Thank you, Rafi. All right, next item up, item 33, procurement template.
Good morning. My name is Michelle Caldwell, Chief Administrative Officer. At last month's meeting, the board requested that we take another look at the procurement summary that accompanies each board report that we write where we are making some kind of a procurement action, either a contract award or modification, et cetera. We did that, and we have made, we also, by the way, reviewed board reports that go forward from other agencies. We looked at OCTAs and BARTs and one other that is escaping me right now. So we tried to take the best of each of those other properties and provide the board with more information that it appears that they're looking for as we make some of these more complicated contract awards for our construction projects and our Measure R projects. So what we have presented to you today is a proposed revised template. We've added some things such as we will now show the evaluation criteria for all of the firms. We will name all the responsive firms. We will discuss each of the firms who responded and how their responsiveness to the evaluation criteria. We're going to include a table that shows the score for each firm, and we'll discuss all of their subcontractors as well. I'd like to offer to you that this is a dynamic product, that we will begin to work with it on the November board reports. I've sent several back and asked them to try out the new template. As the board asks additional questions, we can incorporate that into future board reports. So, you know, let's just take this as a starting point for a way to provide more openness in the procurements and the path forward.
Okay. Yes, Diane? Hang on, your mic, please. I have a motion by Ms. Du Bois, seconded by Mr. Antonovich.
In doing that, I want to thank you very much because I probably was the one who raised my hand and said, what the heck are you talking about? And you've put it all in layman's language and made it very clear so that if I need to delve down, the information is there, and I really appreciate it. So having said that again, that's it.
Thank you.
All right, without objection, any comments from public or the members? Without objection, that will be passed. All members present being recorded as I votes. On to item 34.
Mr. Chair, with your permission, I'd like to cover 34 and 35 together. They are both requests for basically reclassifications of two existing positions. One is to permit a higher salary above $175,000, which requires board approval for a chief information officer position. As you know, in this increasingly high-tech world that we live in, and given the magnitude and size of MTA on our daily operations and construction projects, it's critical that we have a highly skilled, top-quality CIO. Item 35 deals with the approval reclassification for a position, which would be the deputy chief operations officer. The position exists, but we do not currently have a deputy COO. We are obviously we have a rapidly expanding rail system and a very, very large bus network. The rail system grows. We have increased demands for close coordination and management, create synergy with those two modes, in addition with Metrolink. I would also add that we're, especially in operations, approaching a generational transition as baby boomers retire. It is imperative that we have a top quality number two person in operations to help us through this time period. So approval of both both reclassifications is requested, please.
Okay. Any comments? I'm sorry. Any comments by board members or members of the public? Will of the board? A motion by Du Bois, second by Katz or Yaroslavsky or whatever. Anyhow. Without objection, we'll move it to the full board, all members present being recorded as aye votes. On to item, so that was 34 and 35 taken together. Item 36. Who's got 36? Going once. I'm sorry? That would explain it. All right, 36 has been withdrawn. 37. Mr. Hunt.
Chair, item 37 is a contract extension for our Agreement Dynamics services. Agreement Dynamics is currently assisting with labor negotiations here at Metro as well as other public agencies throughout the Southern California region. Her services are vital to the continuing positive momentum we're currently experiencing. We ask your approval.
All right. Motion by Yaroslavsky, second by Ms. Du Bois. Any comments from board members of the public? Without objection, then, all members are recorded as aye votes. That measure is passed to the full board. We're still interested in interest-based problem solving. Next item up, 38.
Item 38 is the station and facility renaming. It was deferred from the full board last month because we removed the Long Beach item. There's basically items A through F, changing the names. I can go through them if you like, but it's been before the committee and the board before.
All right, Mr. Boyce?
I have a problem. We get a cost of renaming between $600,000 and $3.5 million. Can we get a little closer?
Yeah, the cost variation just depends on when you do it. I mean, if you were going to do everything independently, you would have the high end of the cost. If you're going to do it during a service change or during a rail opening, that lowers the cost dramatically. So what the cost estimates they do is they basically design everything by individual elements, but if we do it as a package, we obviously reduce that down. And we would bring that forward as part of the whole capital budget process, so we don't anticipate going at the high range by any way, shape, or form.
Cost less. I mean, that seems to me to be a simple request.
Yes. So. Yeah.
Okay, we have a motion by Du Bois. Is there a second to it? Because I'm
motion is to do what?
It's to pass to the board as it is. Dan, hold that for a sec. Okay, let's. Did you have a question? What's the source of the funding for this? Where's the $600,000 to $3 million coming from?
Well, we would bring it forward as a capital project, so it would still be up to the board. What this action today just changes the names in the future when, or it designates the names, so if there's an opportunity to change it in the future, we would. So when we're opening up a rail line, it gives us an opportunity to change the names on the capital side. We're updating all of our maps and everything. Right. Yes.
Yeah.
So really, with the exception of the Culver City, Venice Robertson one, all the others are in existence.
What's behind it? Why are we even doing it? That's my question. I mean, are a whole lot of people complaining they can't find the stations because they're named wrong?
Now, these were recommendations from various sources, community members, board members. It's basically, and this happens time to time. Last time was, I think, back in 2004. And then along with the Gold Line open as well, too. Basically, communities get together, and they want the name more representative of their community. If you look at the names here, it's things like Vermont to Vermont Avenue, Athens, so it represents the community better. So it's basically when the local communities bring these things forward, and we bring these to the board. The current policy, and again, I'm paraphrasing, but it's basically that the people bringing forward the motions are to identify the funds. In this instance, We're still going to seek that, but we're also going to, you know, if we can accommodate it through construction or as we're updating our services and lines, we would do that.
Can I just, on the gold line, was that done when before the gold line was open?
Actually, we were able to modify some stations, but I think there's still two that are on the books that have not been updated, where the names have been modified.
Again, Matt?
There are, I believe, two stations on the gold line where the board has approved new names, but no funding has been made available yet to modify those stations and change those names.
Mr. Chair?
Yeah.
So, Matt, correct me if I misspeak. So if the board approves a name change, next time we print the timetable, we change the name on the timetable. We change, next time we print the system map, we change the name on the system map. We don't throw away any materials. We don't just, you know, we don't do this on a breakneck pace. The next time we change the signs at the station or clean them up, we change the name. So it's done on a gradual, orderly cost minimization.
Exactly. The only thing I would modify in that is we wait to do the capital improvement first, so we wouldn't modify all the other materials until the station names are actually changed at the physical stations.
Matt, I got to note that there could be 40 components that get modified every time you change the name, and I assume that has to do with schedules, signage. I mean, it seems like a lot of moving pieces.
Yes, it is. It's a major undertaking to change a name. I think one of the examples I gave is just even on our internet site, a station is named over like 86,000 times, you know, throughout the entire website. So it's pretty dramatic to make a facility change, name change. But the best time to do it is when we're opening new lines
you know, because I
capital improvements.
I don't know. I'm sort of, the money makes me nervous also. I appreciate people wanting signs that they personally think are more reflective of their area, which others may disagree with. I mean, I also worry we're changing a sign because some people thought that this was a better idea. So others would think maybe that the existing sign's a better idea. I don't want to wind up going back and forth on this stuff. I guess we could change the names, but make spending dollars as a part of any improvements or modifications that are done to the station and done as part of that project budget and not spend separate funds on it as a way to address the dollar piece of it.
Yeah, and in fact, this item does not obligate any dollars in any way, shape, or form to this.
But it creates an expectation. Unless we're really clear in here that we're not going to do it with new dollars, you know, this is like piecemeal lobbying where folks say, you know, okay, first we'll get it in, then we'll go get the money, and they'll come back and say, but you change the name, how does anybody know? Because there are no signs up there. So, you know, I'd like to see this, I think if the committee agrees, that the policy be that these changes be made when either, as you were saying, when you're opening a new line where it's easy to do, or if there's an improvement project or something at those stations that's going to involve construction, then it should be part of that project budget to change those names.
I'd go along with that.
Yeah.
Like that as a friendly amendment, is that all right?
Absolutely.
Okay. All right. You can work with that, Matt?
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Okay. All right, thanks. Without any comments, public or board members, on a motion by DuBois and second by Yaroslavsky, as amended, this will go to the full board. Okay. Number 38. Number 39. There she is. Ms. Gorman.
Good morning. I'm Karen Gorman from the Office of the Inspector General today to give you an activities report concerning our previous reporting period.
Get a little closer, please.
Oh, sorry. I'm here to give you an activities report for fiscal year 2011. During that period, we opened 85 investigative matters. We completed 72 of those. The balance are still in progress or were completed subsequent to June 30th of this year. of those matters, 22 resulted in investigative reports to the agency concerning some either systemic weakness that we found or, unfortunately, some employee misconduct that had to be dealt with in those cases. Some of those cases resulted in either terminations or other discipline to an employee. Some of them even resulted in criminal prosecution. We recovered $18,000 pursuant to a criminal prosecution of one employee who had been stealing money from petty cash for many years. That was an unfortunate situation, but was remedied. We also completed about 14 audits during the year. Some of them were standard audits that we complete every year, such as travel expenses and accounts. Others were electricity, billing, improvements. And we also participated in the audit of the legal department to make recommendations for improvement of their communications. Yes, sir, do you have a question?
Ms. Gorman, could you tell us how many ongoing audits are there?
There was 85 open during that reporting period of last year. There were 72 completed, so the balance were still in progress that were open during that year. Some of those have now been completed, and others may still be in progress. We're completing any what you might call simple audits within approximately 30 days, about 25% of our cases within 30 days. About another 80% are completed within 120 days. So we are moving things pretty swiftly through the office to get a resolution one way or the other on them. There's only a few matters that take more than 120 days, and those are cases that may involve 50 or more witnesses or documentation that is voluminous.
Okay,
thank you, sir.
I appreciate that.
Thank you, sir. Were there any questions that I could answer today? I also wanted to comment that we're still working quarterly with Mr. Leahy in operations to do our ride-along program, that we found that to be very successful, and Mr. Leahy has been very supportive of that, and we appreciate that with him. Another exciting project that I'll mention to you that we're going to be issuing a report to you soon on is we had some interns go out to all of our parking facilities and all of our rail stations and do a picture catalog of all of our signage. And we have a book that's about this thick of all the pictures of all of our stations and parking lots, because when people come in who get a parking ticket or if people get a fare evasion or other kind of ticket, they're a typical excuse is, well, there was no sign. I didn't see a sign that says I couldn't do this. I wanted to confirm the accuracy of those kinds of statements, and we found that at all of our stations there is a great amount of signage. There is signage when you first come in. We have copies now of all of the signage, what it looks like, where it's posted, and so forth. And so it was a very interesting project. We also noticed the different utilizations that were being made of different parking lots. Some parking lots were 50% full. Some parking lots were overflowing. Some parking lots had no one in them because there was homeless sleeping in them, and they were maybe were unsafe or something like that. So we'll be issuing a report to you to advise you of those findings, and I think you'll find that interesting. And next week at the full board meeting, I'll even be happy to bring in that booklet. So if you'd like to look through that catalog, you might find it interesting, and I'll have that for you next week if you'd like to see that.
Mr. Bois?
Yes, ma'am.
The Caltrans Park and Rides lots?
The 41th. Those,
yes.
I'm told by Mr. Shigatomi here that's with me is yes. And so we'll be providing you with that information on what was what lots had what utilization and what thoughts we might have, along with Mr. Leahy's thoughts on how that might be addressed. I think having this catalog will put us in a good position to evaluate these new lots that we're taking over, how we might address them, and will be a good tool for Mr. Leahy to use as he evaluates how he wants to go forward with those lots. So we're happy to be able to provide that to management.
Good. Thank you.
Thank you, sir.
Okay. Anybody else? Thank you very much.
Thank you, sir.
All right, last item, I believe, is item 61. Transit pass activity?
I don't know.
We covered that one earlier.
We did earlier. Sorry.
Right.
Okay, that's right. Anything else? That's it. All right, we're done then. Thank you very much, everybody. We will see you all at the board meeting or committee meeting in your neighborhood or something.
Thank you.